Hello, it's 3rd of July, and this is episode 214 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. I'm Chris. Joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Chris.
Oh, that's a rubbish Scottish accent you got there.
There is no beginning to your talents, there really isn't.
I know, it's just it's endless. I bet everyone thought, oh, who's that in doing the hosting? maybe not. Right. Should we get on with some news? This is a really quick podcast tonight. We've had some couple of long ones where we've had a fair bit to talk about, but this one we're going to rattle through, I think.
Well, always maintain July, nothing harms.
Yeah, it's a bit boring July.
And it's July the 4th tomorrow, so the Yanks are basically going out.
Yeah, they're rolling down.
Aye.
But we're going to start with Facebook because they've caused a right storm. by performing social psychological experiments on people without their knowledge or consent, the tykes.
Yeah. Now, I got really hacked off with this.
Did you?
Yeah.
Were you one of the, I am incredulous at this.
Well, yeah. Okay. And I think the bit was more the how blasé they were about it. Not so much that it's been done. So yes, they've got their data. And yes, their terms and conditions can let them do anything you like with your data. So maybe we should set the scene in case you've not heard about this.
I'm sure everyone's heard about this, surely.
Yeah. So this was like what they were basically doing was manipulating news feeds of 600,000 users to determine whether if they either made it, you know, if they made it slightly more depressed or it was slightly negative stories or it was, you know, not good news that they were positioning to people, whether that would negatively impact on people's personas.
Yeah, personas and their own posts, basically. So trying to just correlate the fact that, you know, if your stream's full of negativity, are you more negative as a person? If your stream's full of more positivity, are you more positive? And the answer that they came up with was yes. But secondary to that has been all the uproar since it came out that they've been doing this experiment that I guess people have been shocked and have kind of said, are they allowed to do this? What are the ramifications of this? Have they got like terms and conditions? And initially it kind of, we looked like they did have terms and conditions to allow them to do this with user data. But who was it that came along and probed that a bit more? So there was a news story basically that said, it's a Wall Street Journal said that was inserted 4 months after this study had started. So it looks like they were on a little bit of shaky ground.
And there was also the fact that some of the data scientists was like, yeah, Facebook's great because we've got this massive pool of data that we can play and manipulate with.
Maybe playing devil's advocate a little bit. Why are you so upset by all this?
I just think it's went a step too far. So I know companies, I know especially the big tech companies and some of the smaller ones do A/B testing. You know, that whole, you know, let's present two slightly different, you know, looking web pages or two different, you know, results and see
happens
how
all
that,
the time everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think obviously these companies are doing it a lot more because we've all seen the blog post where somebody says like, oh look, Google's got a slightly different, you know, search page, and it's not, it's probably just one of the A/B tests, you know, and you've just stumbled upon something and you've taken a screenshot and you're trying to make news out of it. But I just think this went, it was just a whole kind of psychological part of it that we're if we present, you know, worse news, are you going to be more depressed or affected by it? It's kind of, I thought it was kind of obvious, you know. It's like that, we've talked about it before, that okay, if you look at the news, everybody says, you know, if you look at the news and the governments are, you know, putting out all the, even like today, I mean, America is saying, oh, we're now under attack. So there's a whole loads more people are having to, you know, go through checks. And it's almost like a Project Fear type thing.
The problem is just because something feels like common sense doesn't mean it's scientifically significant. And I guess the experimenters here are trying to get a scientifically significant result, and they can do that through Facebook. And so that's what they've done. It's not like newspapers haven't over the years sort of honed down onto this same thing. You know, if they pump bad news stories onto the front page of their newspapers, they sell more. Okay, they're not looking necessarily at an outcome, but they're still, you know, manipulating your feelings about things.
I feel that's a journalist putting their view, and it's the same with adverts. So adverts is another one where they
I was going to raise adverts as the second one. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. But you know what I mean? Adverts manipulate your feeling. You know, they play out. And it's the same. You walk into a supermarket and it's all tailored to you will buy that product on.
Most adverts are designed to make you feel rubbish unless you buy their product, aren't they? That's the whole premise. What are you doing? You mean you're not doing this? You're fat and ugly if you don't buy my product. You're socially unacceptable without buying my product.
But that's not the premise of Facebook. The whole premise of Facebook is that I've joined to get updates from my friends and what they're doing. And if it's been slightly manipulated to say, actually, we're just going to give you the kind of more depressing news that they're putting out or some of the worst news articles out there, it just feels really dirty. And I don't know, I was chuckling as well because the apology took a number of days, and I think it was typical of Facebook. And similar in America, it's not as big a deal. I think in Europe and UK, it's kind of seems to have touched a nerve more. The apology was that this was part of ongoing research companies do to test different products, which is like I'm actually okay with. And that's what it was. It was poorly communicated. And if that communication apologized. But I'm reading out the statement. This is your statement. So I'm not making this up.
I'm now arguing against you reading that statement.
But then the last bit I thought was the best bit. We never meant to upset you. And it's like, it was. That was your whole experiment. Your whole experiment was to upset me.
Do you know what I think the biggest thing here is the fact that, yes, Facebook are, from a user's perspective, Facebook are designed to share other friends' stories with you.
Yes.
And recently they've peed a lot of people off by actually, you know, deciding what you can see, as in the top stories
and this against,
is adding another variable into that, which has got nothing to do with even them trying to identify which of the stories you kind of want to read. This is them shoving down stories that you may, you know, it's if you're a bit of a depressive then and you get put into this experiment, you know, unwittingly or unknowingly, you know, who knows, that could ruin your week or month.
So taking a real extreme, what happens if you were depressive and you were one of the 600,000 and you thought, you know, and you obviously didn't know you were being manipulated and it actually put you over the edge? What happens if one of those kind of guinea pigs killed himself?
I mean, it sounds extreme. And, you know, who knows, maybe in 600,000 people of a sample, you could find one person. And then you've got to argue that, you know, maybe that one person is too many for something like this. But yes, don't know exactly how I feel on it. I feel at one level, it's probably just people overreacting. But at another level, it certainly feels wrong for a company who's designed to share out stories to actually manipulate that in this way, to deliberately share out negative stories. It feels horrible.
Yeah, and the thing is that a lot of the A/B testing is all about the making things more clickable, engagement, and making it more usable, those kind of things.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, that whole kind of, you know, like the kind of people's psyche and understanding, you know, if we can manipulate this. And it does feel an element of control. You know, it's like we can now start to control our user community. And I know again, it's maybe like a taking it slightly too far, but...
I wonder whether one day they will release who these 600,000 people is. It certainly sounds like if they're not on strong grounds, as far as there may be a class action happen, and I'm sure some sort of, I guess 600,000 people could be compensated. and how many people will be moaning then, if you know about it? That, you know,
the way I feel today, I think I was one of them.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, how do you know? That's the thing. Who knows? So UK are obviously probing this as well, and the Information Commissioner's Office is going to question Facebook over it, basically, and figure out where we stand as far as a country goes on it.
Yeah, and I think they were more worried about data protection, whether it was I think they were concerned that could people's data be linked back to their profile, be linked back to the, you know, so could somebody link
it? Was it truly anonymous type thing? Yeah. Another sort of story that's been back in the news is the adult content filtering. These are the blocks that David Cameron and his cronies have all decided is a really good idea to protect the kids. And there's just more stories, basically. A research group has come out to check 100,000 of the most popular sites, and they found that 19,000 of those 100,000 most popular sites were actually blocked by at least one of the providers. That's across mobile network and home broadband. Wow, that's massive.
We talked about this and we said the filter, some of the providers' filters when they say things like block blogs. What does that mean? Does that because the category seemed too wide? It wasn't just adult content. It's like social networks, but what they termed social networks was also a forum. So if you wanted to go to like AV forums to get an update on some AMP, you'd potentially be blocked by one of these adult content filters. And again, I think that was the hidden bit. The government did a very good job of putting over that we're protecting kids, from nasty content, and all these people out there that are preying on kids. And there's just so many innocent sites. And so this research just rhymed off a few of the sites. So there was Jezebel and was one, and the actual article, and I've lost it in amongst all the text. So stop acting like bouncing back from labour is even possible. And it was a kind of American woman who was in the UK, had no internet access, was using her phone, and three blocked it. And it was wow, and it was classed as adult content. And for all pay as you go,
because you arrive at the site, it says this is not necessarily, this isn't suitable for people under 18. And like, wow, that's wrong.
There was a Porsche brokerage was blocked. O2 blocked them. And again, they did emails and calls and nothing happened. It's only when they tweeted about it. And that was a worry because they said there was ways of removing yourself from the block. And it looks like it's only if you actually go public in these things.
If you go public and make it. Yeah. And so these people are all losing bottom line. That's the end of it. Because these people rely on people going to their websites.
So for businesses, certainly the slightly more dubious, and I don't mean dubious as in it should be blocked, but the more why would this be classed as that? It's called Syrian war commentator. And I'm going to fail in pronunciation, Abu Dadachi. So his blog was screened out by EE, O2, Sky and Vodafone.
Yeah.
And again it's like that sounds more like censorship, rather than protecting kids.
Yeah, and I'm sure whoever made these filters didn't design them to be censorship. It's almost a byproduct of it having done. I mean, the fact that they added additional filters in for things like social media and for music and film piracy websites, the fact that they added them in is dubious as far as that's just hijacking what they've sold this thing as for other means and off the back of other lobbying. They feel, why not chuck them in as well? But things like the Syrian war, you're right. How is it ever classed as? I guess it's because it comes under extremist views, even though it's a war correspondent.
Yeah,
it's
Guido Fawkes. Fawkes.
Yeah, go on. Sorry.
No, I was going to say it was Guido Fawkes is a well-known political website blocked under social media because social media, according to TalkTalk, covers Facebook, Twitter, and also blog and chat forums. But all blogs are classed as social media. Which is amazing.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. You can never have an automated filter that does a good job. I think they'd do well to actually make these filters completely rubbish and block bigger and bigger sites. And then get, it's an impossible task.
Always,
the better these filters go, the worse it'll be, really.
Yep, always wanted to move to China and feel how will it feel to work to sit in a world where everything's kind of governed and blocked and checked, and we've got it here, 20,000 of the 100,000 sites, so you wonder, does it get worse, does it get a lot worse as you start to open up the, so if you look at the 200,000, it's actually more like 30% is blocked.
Exactly. And I'd say I just wonder, I guess you could say that maybe 100,000 or 20. Maybe 10,000 of the 100,000 most popular sites are all sites of dubious nature. that's not
true.
Something that's been explored.
That's true.
the right to be forgotten. We've been talking about this as well as another sort of censorship issue. The Guardian has come forward and said that I think it's how many articles? It's quite a number of their articles are being hidden away, and they're kind of bizarre articles like. And again, the filters aren't working anyway. So there was a referee who was banned because he lied about what reasons for giving a penalty and something. And
Dougie MacDonald. Because it's
not a Scottish name, is it?
No, well, he's refereeing a Celtic Dundee match, so that's why what's happened is he's basically asked Google to remove articles linking to this particular incident, even though he was found to have not so much lied as such, but there was discrepancies between what happened in the match, his match report, and what he reported afterwards. So there is something there. A linesman resigned. He resigned. But he's obviously now trying to hide all this. And the bizarre thing is, so it was so the Guardian published this. There was a BBC News article gone, but also STV News, so that's Scottish Television. They actually put up a blog post and it's all around this guy, Dougie MacDonald. And it's a bizarre one that's come out because it's nothing to do with, you know,
is he feeling backlash? Is that the thing? Is he feeling still backlash and hate mail or whatever? You know, is that why he wants this gone? But as they point out, you know, it doesn't take a genius to work out how to get around these filters. But what they're saying is, you know, why are they there in the first place, really? And you can get around them. But if you want to particularly search for something, then... You know, it's so specific. I guess you have to be specifically looking for it, which probably means you know the background to the story anyway.
Well, the thing is, if you search for Dougie MacDonald Guardian, you can't find it. You can find it in google.com, but you can't find it in the UK Google. If you search for Scottish referee who lied, you still find it. So they've Google have replied to the terms of, obviously he says, if you search for this, then you find this article, please remove it. But if you remove his name from the search, you still get the search returned.
Mm-hmm.
So they've not totally de-indexed the article. They're just taking away the link to his name.
Yeah, and to be honest, a judge would be hard pressed to enforce and say that they had to get rid of the article entirely from all their indexes, no matter what people searched on. I think that's surely, I don't know, an impossible thing. But if Canada have their way, then it will it'll be blocked everywhere. So at the moment, you can go to .com and get the same results and the unfiltered results. But if Canada have their way, they reckon they've got the power to get rid of it off all their listings, not just the one in Canada.
I don't know if Google have been clever. And the first ones I've done are all delisting, not so much like
silly
blog
things.
Sites and you know, maybe low quality. They've actually hit news providers and said, we've
this is your everyday bread and butter and we're going to hit it where it hurts. Yeah.
And so straight away, because Robert Peston was another one of his articles disappeared, and they'd send out an email to the people that are affected. They say, by the way, we've delisted one of your articles.
Yeah, well, that helps as well, doesn't it? Because the person who created it gets the kind of, oh, what's going on here?
So Robert Peston was blogging and saying, why have Google removed one of these articles and removed it also from these other news sites? And so I still have hope that at some point, somebody in Europe says, this is a joke. This is making a mockery of...
Well, I assume that Google are appealing. I think they are. So there's probably still outstanding court cases to come to maybe rectify an erroneous, you know, ruling. It's happened before, but...
It is ridiculous. It does feel ridiculous.
Apple have stopped developing Aperture. Well, they're going to transition it to the latest OS X, but actually they want people to use Photos. Which is their new photo manipulation program. What they might have considered more kind of lower end photo manipulation software, they're actually nowadays becoming so powerful, these kind of wizard effects and stuff, that maybe the market for something like Aperture, which goes at, you know, to the nth degree to allow you to manipulate photos, is just too much.
Maybe the Aperture hasn't released an update in 2 years.
They released fixes and bug chases, whatever.
But no big. Always compared Aperture and Lightroom, and Lightroom always felt faster. Maybe I understood it better, but always felt I could do more. I felt more in control. I liked the library options better. It seemed to click with me more. And I know other people loved Aperture, but
Aperture's too slow for me. It just takes too long. Yeah. I mean, I've got it and I do use it. I used to use it more than I do now, but. It's slow and it's actually not very intuitive, I would say.
I didn't find so. It didn't sit logically with me. And maybe I've not got a photographer's brain, because I know, I remember the first time it came out, they had all these photographers saying, this is how we work. And
maybe it is, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. And so they're going to make sure that there's some easy, and I guess the other thing that we're missing, they're also not going to update iPhoto. So iPhoto and Aperture are going to disappear. And when the new Photos app, which is next year, comes out, that'll replace both, which gives me hope that we will get a consistent, good photo experience across iOS and Mac. But Lightroom's there, and Lightroom is great. So if you're using Aperture right now and you haven't tried Lightroom, I love it.
Yeah, and Adobe have come forward and said, hey, this is our chance. everyone, come here, because we're going to be doubling down on all our updates and support and making sure that we've got a roadmap that really gives you everything that you could possibly want. Just come over here. Don't go with that Photos. It's rubbish. Come with us.
And Apple, to their credit, they actually put in the post that they are going to work with Adobe to make sure there's a good... Or is it Adobe? I can never remember.
It's Adobe.
Okay, Adobe. They're going to make... Every so often, I go back to dark side and say, it's Adobe. But they're going
I looked it up. It was on the Adobe site. They even gave me one of those little, those speaker marks next to their name to say, this is how you say it, and it's Adobe.
I love being schooled by you. Yeah. So Apple have said they're going to make sure there's a good path as well for Aperture users to move over, because there'll be some users that have terabytes of data.
Apple got stung on, I don't know if it was Logic, it was something that they dumbed down on big time. I can't remember which application it was.
Final Cut Pro.
That was it. That's exactly it, yes.
Final Cut Pro was out, and then they brought out Final Cut Pro X, which brought new things, but there's an awful lot was missing. But
that's right. So they were for the professional side of things, there were bits missing that they couldn't do without, and therefore, but it was like a real cut down version.
I'm not a video editor, but if you look at the kind of blog postings, they do seem to have frequently updated and now well overtaken what was there in Final Cut Pro before.
Yes.
And also,
but it was just that step back, and it was like, wow, this is my livelihood, dear.
They timed this really nicely, because they put this announcement out, and on the same day also put out updates for Final Cut Pro, just to kind of reassure that community, we're not leaving you. We just believe Photos is they're chasing the 90% or the 95%, because there's a really small niche that really needs that extra power.
But they've also come out and said that the Logic and Logic and Final Pro are all supported still, so it's great. Because Logic is such a niche thing for them as well, but it's something they do very, very well. And they have a lot of recording studios out there that rely on Logic being still available. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Google Glass, UK providers, cinemas, UK cinemas, View, have come out and said, you're not welcome in our cinema if you've got a Google Glass on. Because obviously we've got it released officially over in the UK now. So these companies have now got to deal with that and the backlash. Even though Google Glass will only record for 45 minutes before it dies.
And even though nobody's going to buy one.
No, because it costs £1,000. And Google have come back and said, look, please don't just overreact and ban these things outright. Just treat them like you treat mobile phone and just say, turn them off. I mean, why you'd want to have Google Glass on your head if it's in a turned off state is beyond me.
I had visions of myself with my glasses on and a Google Glass on top, and then putting 3D glasses on. That would be awesome.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, yes, Google have a vested interest to try and make sure that it doesn't get banned. And I guess they've gone through this in America. I think we heard quite a number of stories there as well, exactly the same lines. So, say cinema goers that think that their livelihoods are ruined by the fact that people go into their thing and record it on a mobile phone or on Google Glass are wrong. Their livelihood is ruined because it costs like 15 quid to go to the cinema. It doesn't, by the time you've bought a drink, maybe.
No, me and Shaq went to see Godzilla, £32, before we'd bought any food and drink.
So there you go. And was that in 3D or not?
3D IMAX. And I'd bought premium seats, so they're nice, a little bit more comfier, and then they fleece you on the... By the way, you've bought this in a credit card. It's like the whole bloody internet runs in credit cards. Why am I having to pay you a surcharge? Cocks.
So £16 then for a ticket to go to the cinema. That's what it is, because you spend so much money on visual effects and trying to get, the wrong things and paying like these superstars when you should actually go back to doing good stories.
And then the condescenders with
there you go.
The condescenders with an empty cinema advert and all the dust and saying your piracy route.
Yeah, tell everyone I'm in the blooming cinema here watching it, you bugger.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Put the world drive.
For the win.
Yeah, exactly. I just need a taxi now and I'm all set. Anyway, that's end of the news, but you've got a pick for us, and quite a fun pick it is.
It's called Smartypins. So you go to smartypins.withgoogle.com, and it's a trivia game based on geography. It will ask you some questions. It will present you a map. You drop your pin. If you are quite close to your answer, then you might get some bonus points. If you're not, it takes miles off your total once you get to zero.
Yeah, you
miles.
You have a total number of miles, and every time you drop your pin, so the trivia question is all location based, basically. So where is such and such a person born, or where is this in modern day Europe, or whatever. So yeah, and very clever. How far did you get? I've only played once.
I played once and I got 18.
I got 7.
But I was kind of lucky that some of them, I think about 3/4 of them were all kind of UK, and I don't know if that was lucky or not.
Maybe they twisted it for it. But
yeah, because I mean, there's the first one I've just went to just now. Where did Fab Four come from? And it's like,
right, okay.
Obviously it's Manchester, so it's like you just drop it on and perfect answer. Which Saudi Arabian city is the birthplace of Muhammad?
Well, see, I don't know.
So I have guessed it's Medina. And we'll submit the answer, and I was 200 miles away. That was Mecca.
I got one that I was quite surprised that I got. I cannot remember what it was, but I was smack on, and it said, "You have been smack on," and I got a little like, "Wee!" Like a little badge. Anyway, yeah, it's quite a lot of fun. See how far you can get. You get 1,000 miles to start with. So that's how many miles distant you can be from answers in total. So yeah, go to it. Smartypins.withgoogle.com.
And it's actually just nice and free.
Yeah, and you know what? It runs dead quick. It shows what can be done, and it's using kind of Google's new material design as well, which I quite like.
Yeah.
Good for that. Thank you very much for listening. And if you want to find out more about us, what we do, you can do www.digitaloutbox.com. Email is info@digitaloutbox.com, and you can get us on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. And I'm on Twitter as Cheesy UK. My racing blog is academyracer.co.uk. Only 2 weeks to my next race. And Ian, where can we find you?
My blog is iand.net, and I'm on Twitter as Shweepa.
Fabulous. We will speak to you next week. So goodbye.
Toodle pip.
Ta-ra.
I was trying to think of what Yorkshire people say when you say goodbye. I've no idea.
That's it. Later, isn't it? Don't know. Ta-ra.